The first matter on this afternoon's calendar is docket number 79792, State of Nevada versus Second Judicial District Court, Honorable Kathleen Dracklich. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes.
Okay, would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, 5 minutes.
All right.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Justice, Justice Hardesty, Justice Kadish. May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Noble and I represent the Washoe County District Attorney's Office. In 2017, the Nevada legislature expressly issued a statute and a set of statutes that indicate that public policy favors giving second chances to offenders who have been rehabilitated. And they changed our sealing statutes in some pretty substantial ways. In furtherance of its overarching goal of giving people second chances, the legislature established a rebuttable presumption in favor of sealing. It also shortened the period of time that people have to wait before they can try to seal their records, and it streamlined the process by enabling petitioners to seek to seal several criminal convictions from different jurisdictions in a single district court. In these consolidated writs, the state asks this court to find that, one, prosecutorial participation in the sealing process is permissive and not mandatory, and two, that when courts order prosecutors to inspect or audit already verified criminal histories submitted by petitioners with their applications, they act in excess of their jurisdiction and contrary to legislative intent. Our first argument, of course, is that participation is permissive under the plain language of the statute. NRS 179.2453 and 4 contemplate a procedure in which, if the DA does not stipulate, a hearing will be held. But they also indicate that any person who has relevant evidence, including the prosecutor, any member of the community, a law enforcement agency, may appear to testify or present evidence regarding the petition. And even, it's important to note, if a stipulation occurs, the district court may still hold a hearing. As the Attorney General indicated in its amicus brief in support of our position, it is not the prosecution that bears the burden of proving that records should not be sealed. The district court appears to contend that a stipulation from the state relieves it of its obligation to conduct its own analysis as to whether or not the petitioner not only meets the statutory requirements, but whether or not this person is worthy of a second chance in order to move back into society as someone with no criminal record.
Just a practical question here. In what case wouldn't you stipulate unless you're going to specifically oppose? And it seems to me like the court is trying to get information on the verification of the conviction history. Tell me a situation that you're not opposing something, but yet you won't stipulate.
Thank you for the question, sir. So I've thought about this a lot because it seems to be one of the major questions we have here today. Why wouldn't we stipulate if we don't have a basis to object? And the answer for the Washoe County District Attorney's Office is this. With these fairly substantial changes to our sealing statutes, which in some cases greatly reduce the waiting period that a person has before they can file their petition, we have people who have criminal histories that are now seeking to seal their records in a much shorter period of time. And while we may have concerns about that, that doesn't mean we have a legal basis to defeat the rebuttable presumption in favor of sealing. But to stipulate to something, in our view, means to advocate for it, means to agree that it should happen. And so what we'd like to be able to do is not take a position where we don't think it's appropriate.
Well, if you have, sorry, this is Justice Kadish, if you have a basis to have some concerns, even though it meets the legal requirements, why wouldn't you share those concerns with the court, who, as you pointed out, is the one that's got to make the decision on it?
Thank you for the question, Justice Kadish. The reason for that is this. Our concern that this is simply too short a time period is not something that even this court can consider or a district court can consider. The legislature has decided how long people have to wait. And so certainly our perhaps disagreement with that statutory provision certainly isn't evidence to establish that somebody's criminal history shouldn't be sealed. So if we don't have something that...
Sorry, so the concern is with the legislative changes that are in place that bind us and you.
Yes, Justice Cage, that is what it is. And then the second part of your question, Mr. Chief Justice, I believe had to do with the criminal histories. In other words, these petitioners are submitting something from a repository. There's a verified criminal history, but why wouldn't we just run, I think, essentially a second criminal history in advance of the petition or to see if the representations in the criminal history submitted by the petitioner are accurate? Am I phrasing that more or less?
That's not where you. That's not where your concern is. Then is that correct? Is that the court? I think has the concern, the district court, that perhaps it's not accurate, and they're looking to you to perhaps verify that. Is that a wrong assumption?
On the part of the court, yes, but we do have a concern about that, and it's this. Number one, it defeats the purpose of the statute. It's not authorized by the statute. What the legislature is trying to do is facilitate these petitions getting sealed in the easiest manner for the petitioners. The other...
DA's office to stipulate unless they have an objection?
What we're trying to say is that, sure, it would make it easier and faster for everyone if the Washoe County District Attorney's Office would stipulate when we don't have a basis to overcome the rebuttable presumption, but we're not obligated to advocate for the sealing of the record. Our other...
advocating, and then, you know, as part of this legislation that came into place in 2017, the District Attorneys Association was pretty well involved in that, weren't they?
The District Attorneys Association was involved, but I would also respectfully observe that the statutory language here is clear, so I don't think we need to get to the legislative history. The other concern we have is this. If the court has a concern about the representations in the verified criminal history that they've had to obtain from the repository, the petitioner has had to obtain, then the court has the resources to run a subsequent history. And that's certainly established in the record and in the materials provided to this court in the state's appendices. District court has access to NCIC, CJIS. It has access to all the same criminal justice databases that the district attorney's office does. But when the district court orders us to use our license to run a subsequent criminal history, that's an infringement on executive function. And this court recognized that in some sense in, I believe it was Ojeda Enriquez. That was the case that involved juror criminal histories and whether or not we have to run them in advance of jury trials. And so our argument is that nowhere in the statute does it authorize the court to order us to use our license to run a separate criminal history, and nowhere in the statute does it authorize the court to force us to take a position. The clear language of the statutory scheme is permissive, not mandatory.
So, Ms. Noble, wasn't one of the changes made in 2017, as you say, to kind of in favor of sealing of records, one of the changes was to make clear that the court isn't required to have a hearing in each one of these cases, and specifically that it doesn't have to have a hearing if the DA stipulates, but if the DA does not stipulate or the prosecuting agency doesn't stipulate, then the court is required to have a hearing. So by refusing to stipulate to any, you're effectively saying, court, you have to have a hearing on each one of these cases, but then you're saying you have to have a hearing, but we're not going to show up for it because we don't really have an argument to make. Isn't there sort of a, aren't you just making extra work for a court that's already quite busy?
Thank you for the question, Justice Kadish. And I respectfully disagree with, I understand what you're saying in terms of the courts being busy. District attorney's offices are busy too. We're all busy, and that's our jobs. But what I'm saying is that there's nowhere in the statute that authorizes that. Whether or not that should be changed, whether or not it's fair, that's a different question. But this is the scheme that the legislature set up. And I also want to point out, I think it's dangerous for courts to assume that simply because a district attorney or prosecuting agency stipulates that they are now relieved of their requirement to make that inquiry. As the Court of Appeals recently observed in application of Finley, this is a two-step process. Does the person, one, meet the minimum statutory requirements? Is their petition in order? And two, do they deserve this act of grace, this second chance? That is within the sole discretion of the district court. And it is improper for the district court to put that judicial task onto the district attorney's office. So courts are not safe.
But doesn't the statute provide, though, a rebuttable presumption now in favor of it? And if so, how is that presumption being rebutted? The court is not an investigating agency to present its own evidence to rebut a presumption. How's that going to happen?
Well, the court, for example, could look at the pattern of the person's criminal history and consider the potential danger to the community. There's also a provision in the statute. It's not just the prosecutor who can appear at these hearings and state their opinion or have thoughts to share with the court. It's any person having any relevant evidence. That could be members of the community. If it's a person who has a history of retail theft, it could be the Retailers Association. There's really no limitation as to who could show up at that hearing and offer evidence or testimony to the court that might affect its decision, even if the petition...
Notice.
That's a good question.
So what does it mean? If anybody can appear and give testimony and input, but yet nobody has noticed except the DA's office and the petitioner in the court, what does that mean?
Thank you for the question, Justice Perry-Gary. Well, actually, several people are noticed. Every law enforcement agency that has arrested that person is noticed.
Okay.
And I believe the courts, I had to look back at the statute, but it's not just the prosecutors that are noticed. It's every law enforcement agency that's had contact with this person.
Oh, it's a little feedback.
Sorry.
Ms. Noble, I'm sorry, finish answering Justice Perry-Gary's question, and then I have a question if you don't mind.
Yes, Justice Hardesty. So I guess my point is that even though there may be practical problems in terms of notification and who shows up, it's not the district attorney's office who bears that burden. It's not necessarily the court. It's not clear in the statute. And that might be a flaw in the statutory construction, but it's not up to the prosecutor's offices to fix that.
Okay.
Yes, Justice Hardesty?
So these sealing matters are not criminal in nature. They are civil in nature. And so ordinarily when parties who are provided an opportunity to participate in a civil matter choose not to, then the court, it seems to me, generally treats that as a non-objection, or at the very least recognizes that they have no information to offer to rebut the presumption. How, on behalf of the District Attorney's Office of Washoe County, do you want the court system to treat your non-appearances? Should we treat them as I have suggested? That is, we have no information to offer to rebut the presumption, or we have no objection because we don't have any, because it appears to satisfy the requirements of the statute, or we just don't care and we're not going to participate.
So Justice Hardesty, I think I would go with option one. Definitely not the one we don't care. It would be that we do not have helpful information to offer this proceeding to aid in the court's decision.
And to rebut the presumption.
Yes, Justice Hardesty. And I would also...
Okay. So one additional thing. You made a statement earlier in your comments that the courts have the ability and the resources to verify the criminal history. I'm not sure that the latter is correct. Is it the court has the ability to access the criminal history, but are you suggesting that there's an affidavit or some information in the record that shows that the courts have the resources to verify the accuracy of the criminal history?
Yes, Justice Hardesty, I would point to, and I'm sorry, I don't know which one of her appendices it's in, but the testimony of Jackie Bryant before the Subcommittee on Criminal Justice Information Sharing indicates all the different ways in which the district court uses those databases to verify information.
Information.
Okay. Thank you.
I have 13 seconds left, so.
Actually, what I'll do, since we chewed into quite a bit of your time, I'm going to give you 2 additional minutes for rebuttal, and I'll add 2 minutes to Mr. Handy's time as well.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Peter Handy. I'm a Deputy Attorney General with the Nevada Office of the Attorney General, representing the respondents in this case, the Second Judicial District Court, and the Honorable Kathleen Draculich. Your Honors, this case turns on 3 issues. First, whether the district courts have the inherent authority to compel parties to respond to petitions to seal criminal records and to provide information. Second, whether the authority is circumvented by the grant of the affirmative right to stipulate to petitions or to testify and provide evidence at hearings on those petitions. And third, whether the Second Judicial District Court, in the matters from which these writ petitions arise, properly exercised its authority to order the Washoe County District Attorney's Office to respond or oppose the petitions and to compare the criminal histories provided by the offenders to its own records. To the first point, Article 6, Section 6 of the Nevada Constitution confers the power of the district courts to issue all writs or orders proper and necessary to complete the exercise of their jurisdiction. As explained in Finley v. Henderson.
Mr. Handy, I don't think there's any question here that the court has jurisdiction to hear a petition for sealing records. Where in the statute do you get that the district attorney is a party? I don't understand where they are a party to the proceedings. They have the opportunity to stipulate, or if they choose not to, then that's the question here. The only thing the statute says is that if the prosecuting attorney does not stipulate to the sealing of the records, a hearing on the petition must be conducted. And in connection with that hearing, the district court is supplied with direction from the statute that the petition is presumptively to be granted. It's subject to a rebuttable presumption. So if the DA, for whatever motive or reason, as explained by Ms. Noble, chooses not to attend, how's that any different than any other civil proceeding in which a party chooses not to attend, let alone someone who is tangentially related and elects not to show up? I mean, one could argue that this is the DA's way of, at least in Washoe County, compelling hearings in all cases, rather than simply stipulating to the sealing of records, which makes it cumbersome, makes it inconvenient, imposes an additional burden on the court. But if they don't show, they don't get to speak. So why shouldn't the court just treat their absence for what it is? They chose not to participate.
And Your Honor, to address your first question, which is whether the district attorney's office is a party, I don't think that subsection 3 of 179.245 exempts them from their party status. The DA's office is clearly intended by the legislature to be a party to these proceedings. They have to be noticed by the court of these proceedings or provided with a copy of the petition. They have records that are subject to the sealing of the court, and is made clear by an abundance of case law. So the court must have some jurisdiction and over the particular party to enforce orders against that party. I think it's further informed by the ability of the DA's office to exercise some discretion in the administration of the case itself. The DA's office can choose to stipulate or not to stipulate to a particular petition. They're already involving themselves in the process, and they're intended to be involved in the process by the legislature. Because they're being involved in that process, the court can then compel them to provide some kind of response. As Your Honor indicated, courts have to say...
Mr. Handy, their participation in the process by statute is discretionary. It is very clear in the last sentence of subsection 3, the prosecuting attorney and any person having relevant evidence may testify and present evidence at any hearing of the petition. It's totally discretionary, and that discretion resides with the prosecuting attorney and any number of people who may have relevant evidence. And if they elect not to show, the only remedy that's described in the statute, at least in the next subsection, is that the court has to proceed with a hearing.
That's correct, Your
Honor. I still don't understand where in the statute that just because the statute affords to the prosecuting attorney the right to participate in this proceeding, that they become a party. They are designated as someone in the statute who may have relevant information, and so with that, they get a chance, if they choose to participate. But if they don't show, why shouldn't the district court treat that similarly to the way the court would in a civil matter? If they are a party and it was a civil matter, the court would hold a default, wouldn't it?
Generally, it would. It depends on the type of civil matter. In some cases, the court has to do more inquiry than just respond to the evidence that's presented by one or both of the parties. This is something that's more akin to a writ petition or to a guardianship petition, where the court does have to make specific findings before it moves on to that discretionary analysis. And in some cases...
Doesn't the statute lay out for the court what it is supposed to find? And in doing so, it's guided by rebuttable presumptions on factual questions.
It is your
so. Honor. Why can't the court, when it gets the petition, and it looks at the petition and maybe inquires of the petitioner if it's having a hearing, and nobody else shows, why wouldn't the court be able to simply say, "There's no information that I have that rebuts the presumption. I'm going to grant the petition."
I think the court could, provided the information meets the statutory requirements, such that the presumption has been raised. But I don't think the court needs to in every case that the DA's office doesn't appear in. So if the DA's office, as the Washoe County DA's office is doing here, has indicated to the court, we're not going to stipulate to any petitions, the court knows it's going to have to set each of these matters for a hearing. But the court can still inquire of the DA's office whether it intends to oppose or not oppose a particular petition so that it can appropriately schedule that hearing. The court may need to know whether witnesses or evidence is going to be presented, to know what calendar to put it on, as to how much time this hearing may take on its docket. These are important considerations the court needs to make when considering whether or not and how it's going to administer the remainder of the case. The court having to hold that hearing also may need to make other inquiries. Perhaps the report that was provided by the petitioner is somehow incomplete. It's often the case that offenders are arrested for crimes and then no charges are subsequently made by a DA's office, in which case there might be an instance of an arrest in the incidus record, but for which the petitioner shouldn't actually had it held against him that there may be some charges that are happening in the interim. And the only way a court's going to be able to obtain that information isn't through the petitioner, who's probably not going to know if charges have been leveled against him, but from the district attorney's office, who will have records related to that petitioner.
Well, I suppose it could be argued, Mr. Handy, that if the district attorney's office cares about these matters and they are given notice of it, and they know of some reason why the sealing record should not be granted, they'll show at the hearing. But if, on the other hand, they choose not to, apparently they don't have information to provide to the court that provides any assistance to the court at all. So I just, am concerned about why it's necessary to have the DA physically present at the hearing. I get your concern about scheduling issues. Yes, that could be an issue. But on the other hand, if you were to set a half a dozen sealing records petitions for an hour and no one shows, the court's going to be out of there in 15 minutes. So I'm not sure that that's really a serious problem. If the court discovers when it gets there that there is a material issue that's going to require some additional time, then it can reset the hearing for a future date if that's necessary. But these are fairly routine matters for the most part, based on information that I've obtained in looking at this question in the past. Legal aid organizations throughout the state tell me that these are relatively routine processes that they assist people with. So I can see the DA's point by saying, look, we got notice of the petition. Unless we're going to assume that the DA is not going to do their job, and I don't think that that's fair to assume either. If the DA looks at it and says, we don't have information to provide, then why not let the court proceed with the rebuttable presumption that's built in the statute? I don't understand why we shouldn't do that.
I think because the court still has the obligation under the scheme to weigh the interests of the involved parties, including those of the offender and having their records sealed, those of the agencies that are having the records sealed, and those of law enforcement who may come into contact with offenders who've had records sealed in the future, and the interest of the public at large, whether it's in their interest to have those records sealed. And the judge may need more information than is provided by the petitioner to exercise his discretion in making that determination. Because the legislature...
But Mr. Handy, you are identifying subject matters that one would expect a district attorney who is competent and cares about the criminal justice system to bring to the attention of the court. I'm assuming, based on what Ms. Noble said in response to my question, that in instances in which the DA does not show their review of the petition and whatever checking they've done satisfies them, that they have nothing to offer. I get the fact that the judge is in the position of having to make the findings, but that's guided by the statute. And the statute says, in the absence of information that rebuts the presumption, then you should complete your work and decide the problem.
I think the problem with that, Justice Hardesty, is that it presumes that the district attorney is in the position to decide what the court needs to inquire into to make its determination. When under these type of proceedings, it's the court who should be deciding what kind of information it doesn't have but is necessary to its determination. Certainly, it could infer by the non-involvement of a district attorney's office that they have nothing of use to provide. But the courts, in exercising discretion, might need some other information. In Stockley, in case 8008 below, the offender is trying to have sealed a battery causing substantial bodily harm. It might not be enough just to see from that person's criminal record that that crime should or should not be sealed from a discretionary point of view of the court. While the court certainly has to raise that presumption if it has been raised based on the content of the petition, the facts aren't necessarily, first, the presumption doesn't have to be rebutted by the DA's office or by any interested person. It may be. The provision creating the standard for which that might be defeated was deleted from the ultimate statute. But the court, in balancing these interests, can find that the facts in its purview outweigh that presumption has been raised and still exercise discretion to refuse to seal those records. And if it needs other information in order to exercise that discretion, the party best situated to ask for some of that information, not to take a position, it's not the Second Judicial District Court's position that it can tell the DA's office what position to take vis-a-vis sealing. It's their position that they can inquire as to information that they have and ask them to respond with that information so the court can be better informed to make its determination.
So the DA shows up at one of these hearings after being ordered to attend and repeats what Ms. Noble says. We have no information that we can offer to the court. What value did that accomplish?
It doesn't inquire any at that point, but I think the court can subsequently ask, well, I'm looking at the criminal history for the petitioner, and it indicates that they had no disposition pursuant to this charge. Do you have any records available as to the disposition of that charge? And then the court can gain information that is helpful from that agency. Do you have a question, Justice Perigari? I apologize.
I'm just curious, as another practical matter, how is this occurring in the second judicial district? Does every judge have the same protocol and the same routine?
No, as is made clear, I think in the record from both parties, each judge is doing it differently. And I think we expect this to happen. This is a good thing because each judge, when exercising their discretion, has particular strengths and experience they bring to the bench. So they might require different kinds of information exercising their discretion. A judge that doesn't have a significant amount of experience reviewing in CJIS records may need some assistance from a DA's office in decoding the limited amount of information included therein. A judge who has extensive experience reviewing those may not need that information at all and may not be compelling a district attorney's office to respond to a petition or to appear or even to provide information. And it's good public policy the judges are able to exercise that discretion in order to get the information they need from the party who's most likely to have it. I think further to respond to the DA's office argument that courts could inquire into the NCDIS database or look into the Spillman records to find out particular information, Judicial Canon 2.9 prevents judges from independently investigating issues. Specifically, subsection C prevents that. Comment 6 says that they're not to look into electronic databases to find information. And Rule 2.9 is meant to prohibit judges from entering into these ex parte endeavors such that the parties at the issue don't understand necessarily what the nature, scope, or extent of those investigations are. And by asking the district attorney's office to provide that information, it's one, put on the record in front of the court in such a way that the petitioner is on notice to be able to respond or provide or procure additional information for that information. And it's also, and it puts the petitioner in a better position to understand what's going on. The court shouldn't have to be acting adversarially to a petitioner in record sealing cases. They shouldn't need to be an inquisitor. They should be acting as the legislature intended, trying to give offenders
Mr. Handy, this is Justice Kadish. Wouldn't it be up to the legislature to impose an obligation on the DA's office in these cases if they intended for them to have an obligation, and didn't they in fact choose not to impose that obligation?
If I understand your question correctly, it's that obligation to respond and attend these hearings?
Yes, or to rebut the presumption?
Right, and if it were to rebut the presumption, that language was already ready to go and be enacted by legislature. They don't have the obligation to rebut the presumption as the statute stands now, and that was made clear by the NDAA saying, in effect, that they didn't want to be the person or the agency or entity to bear that burden, and it also deleted that clear and convincing evidence standard by which it needed to be proven to rebut that presumption.
All right, Justice Kadish, Justice Hardesty, any additional questions for Mr. Handy?
No, thank you.
No, thank you, Mr. Handy. Thank you.
All right, you're ready, sir.
The rule that we're asking this court to adopt today is this: where a prosecuting agency communicates to the district court that it's exercising its option under the statute to waive its statutory right of participation in sealing proceedings, district courts may not properly compel prosecuting agencies to participate or attend, and may not enlist the prosecutor to audit the already verified criminal history presented by the petitioner. Now, I certainly understand the frustration of courts. I have been in many courtrooms where the judges are frustrated with me due to our position, and I understand where the courts are coming from. But the statutory construction is what it is in these cases. And there's also an assumption being made, I think, by the court that we are an opposing party. We're not. These are civil proceedings, and they take place after the justice system has been completed. Essentially, the prosecutors pursued justice. They've issued charges. They've either reached a plea agreement or tried the case, tried to get an appropriate sentence, protected that sentence potentially on post-conviction challenges.
Ms. Noble, Ms. Noble, I apologize. With not much time left, so I just want to ask this quick question.
Yes, Justice Kagan.
Has Judge Draculich or another judge in the second JD threatened you or your office with contempt?
Thank you for the question, Justice Kadish. The answer with respect to Judge Draculich is no. Judge Draculich has not made that threat. What we have been, and many deputies have attended many hearings, but in particular, there are certain departments in the Second Judicial District Court that have made clear to line deputies attending criminal calendars that if we do not attend in those departments, we will be held in contempt of court. With respect to an example of that in the record, I believe there is, if I may just finish answering the question.
Yes, please.
You look at the third supplemental appendix, page 23, lines 17 through 24, we do have one of our district court judges indicating, I believe I make a comment that I'm here today because I don't want to be held in contempt, and he says, well, I'm glad you're here. That's in response to that department's repeated indications that they would hold the district attorney's office in contempt if they did not attend sealing proceedings. And I know I'm not quite out of time. So we ask in this case.
Sorry,
who are you? Oh, I am. I'm sorry. Yes. I get confused by these timers. I apologize.
Overage.
Thank you.
Colleagues, any additional questions for Ms. Noble?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you,
thank
you, counsel, for your briefs in this matter and the argument today. This matter will stand submitted.